Most people think they'd notice if something was wrong, if their memories didn't match their movements, if their hands started doing things their brain didn't sign off on. But what if the whole point was that you wouldn't? He didn't remember getting into the car, but now he was driving. The road ahead was dark, wet, and unfamiliar. Trees flashing by in the headlights, like ghosts fleeing the scene. His hands were on the wheel, steady, too steady. He blinked hard. No music, no phone, no GPS, just silence. He checked the dashboard clock, 3:14 a.m. His last memory was brushing his teeth before bed. A familiar toothbrush, a familiar mirror, then nothing. Now he was three counties away. The glove box was open. A folded paper inside. A name. A time. A location. Not his handwriting. In the rearview mirror, his own eyes didn't look back. And somewhere, buried in the static of his mind, a voice he didn't recognize whispered, "Good job. Now go home." But what if that wasn't fiction? In 1953, the CIA drugged a U.S. Army scientist without his consent. 9 days later, he fell from a 13th-story hotel window. The government said it was suicide, but the autopsy showed blunt force trauma to the head. His name was Frank Olson, and he wasn't the only one. They tested prisoners on hospital patients, on children. People who were sick, people who were locked up, people who thought they were getting help. They walked into hospitals for therapy and walked out with erased memories. They checked into psych wards for depression and woke up not knowing their own name. Mothers, veterans, foster kids, subjects, not patients. Their lives were reduced to data. Their pain became footnotes. Their trauma was filed under results. Instead, they became data points, without consent, without names. In most of the documents, they burned them, but not all of them. Real quick, before we go any further, this channel doesn't run on ad dollars or brand deals. It runs on you. If you want to help keep the lights on and the rabbit holes open, please hit subscribe. It's free, and yeah, it makes a huge difference for the channel. All right, let's keep going. MKUltra is one of those stories we think we already know. The acid tests, the hippie rumors, the crazy sci-fi brainwashing stuff. But the truth isn't psychedelic, it's clinical. What actually happened was colder, quieter, and far more dangerous. Because this wasn't just one rogue program. It was a nationwide network, 149 sub-projects, funded by the CIA, hidden in hospitals, prisons, universities. They tested chemicals that erased memory, implanted voices using radio signals, split personalities using hypnosis and trauma, and they wrote it all down. These weren't rumors. They were budgeted line items, labeled, logged, filed away like medical trials. This wasn't an experiment. It was an infrastructure project, a blueprint for how to fracture a mind and rebuild it from scratch. But here's the part most people miss. MKUltra didn't disappear. It mutated. The drugs and electrodes were just a prototype phase. What they really wanted was behavioral control without physical contact. Something you wouldn't see coming, because it didn't need a cage. It needed a screen. And today, you're holding it. The voices aren't in your head anymore. They're in your feed. And the scariest part? We didn't resist. We clicked, "I agree." They didn't run MKUltra like some shady backroom experiment. They ran it like a startup with funding departments, a mission statement, and what they'd probably call test groups. The only difference? The product was psychological devastation. Let's break it down. MKUltra wasn't one project. It was 149 different sub-projects. And once you see how they organized it, you'll realize this wasn't chaos. It was architecture. First up, the Biochemical Warfare Division, sub-projects 1 through 40. This is where the LSD rumors come from. But that was just a demo version. They were also experimenting with BZ, a military-grade deliriant, along with scopolamine, mescaline, amphetamines, and morphine. Their goal wasn't just to open the mind, it was to take control of it. Some of these tests weren't even about truth serums. They were allegedly trying to erase memory entirely. And this isn't speculation. Subproject 10, for example, tested LSD on unwitting hospital patients at New York's Mount Sinai Hospital, documented in the 1977 Senate hearings. Subproject 5 explored synthetic mescaline compounds under classified supervision at Edgewood Arsenal, as revealed in the CIA's 1977 document dump. Next, we've got subprojects 41 through 80, the Behavioral Science Division. This is where things get darker. We're talking sleep deprivation, isolation chambers, hypnosis, trauma-induced regression. This wasn't research. This was psychological demolition. They wanted to know how far a mind could bend before it snapped and whether you could rebuild it afterward. In subproject 39, the CIA tested enforced age regression using hypnosis and drugs to implant false childhood memories. Yes, seriously. That came directly from declassified MKUltra financial records reviewed by the Church Committee. Subproject 61 involved experiments on so-called terminal prisoners, looking at how deep trauma could make someone more suggestible or compliant. That one was quietly documented in Senate Report 94-755. Then it gets weirder. Subprojects 81 to 95, the Psychic and Parapsychology Wing. This is where early remote viewing programs came from. Long before Project Stargate went public, MKUltra was funding studies into ESP, telepathic suggestion, even brain-to-brain communication using altered states. Subproject 84 involved ESP testing at a private lab in California, where psychic subjects were observed trying to describe hidden objects in other rooms. That shows up in a CIA memo, 19-408B, obtained through a 1994 FOIA release. And in Subproject 91, researchers tried to use hypnosis and drugs to increase susceptibility to mental suggestion across distances. Again, folks, not folklore. That's from the 1977 MKUltra testimony files. Then you've got subprojects 96 through 120, the tech experiments, electroshock, sensory distortion, and early mind-machine interfaces. They weren't just dosing people, they were wiring them. They experimented with electromagnetic field exposure. They tried creating auditory hallucinations with radio waves. And yes, in some cases, they implanted micro devices. Subproject 119 was specifically tasked with studying the impact of electromagnetic signals on human behavior, as described in Helms Memo 328-1B in 1960, now available through the National Security Archive. In Subproject 103, that one involved neural implant research conducted in coordination with psychiatric institutions, documented in MKUltra Financial Disclosure Appendix 2. And finally, the deepest layer, Subprojects 121 through 149, the institutional fronts. This is how they got away with it. Funding was funneled through universities, hospitals, and even churches. Places like MIT, Stanford, McGill, and Columbia all received money tied to MKUltra through cutout organizations like the Society for the Investigation of Human Ecology. Subproject 142 was used to quietly test memory suppression and implantation techniques at Cornell and Berkeley. That one's documented in the CIA's 1963 Internal Audit of MKUltra Front Groups, also released in the 1977 Senate hearings. And of course, the infamous Subproject 68, Ewan Cameron's psychic driving and depatterning programs at the Allen Memorial Institute in Montreal. That wasn't just unethical, it was torture. He erased people's personalities with forced sleep, electroshock, and repetition tapes. That's not a conspiracy theory. That was funded by the CIA and revealed in the Canadian Royal Commission on MKUltra in 1986. So when people say MKUltra was just LSD, this is what they're not telling you. It was drugs, yes, but also hypnosis, trauma, implants, and psychic targeting. It was war on the mind, conducted not just by rogue agents, but with help from some of the most prestigious institutions on the planet. And it didn't end because it failed. It ended because they learned what they needed to know. Okay, so here's the rub. They weren't hiding this stuff in the shadows. They wrote it down, numbered it, and filed it away like they were ordering takeout. Here's what those files say. Subproject 130, Personality Reconstruction. This wasn't about trauma. This was about control through destruction. The official title? Studies in Personality Isolation and Reconstruction. Translation? Strip a person's identity down to the studs and build a new one from scratch. This subproject was linked to work at Tulane University, where researchers tested electrical stimulation of the brain, ESB, to produce emotional reactions. In some cases, it was paired with LSD or sensory deprivation to see how far a subject could be pushed before snapping and reassembling. And here's the kicker. The language used in their internal memos wasn't medical. It was architectural. They weren't studying people. They were redesigning them. The receipt? CIA MKUltra documents released under FOIA, the Freedom of Information Act, specifically via the Church Committee hearings, and referenced in John Mark's 1979 book, The Search for the Manchurian Candidate. Subproject 119 is up next. Bioelectric signal manipulation. This one sounds like science fiction, but it's very real. Subproject 119 focused on tracking, interpreting, and manipulating bioelectric signals, the electrical activity in your brain and nervous system. What they wanted to know? Can you remotely disrupt those signals? Can you inject signals into the brain using radio frequency or electromagnetic waves? Can you cause hallucinations or compliance without the subject knowing? In short, they were looking into non-lethal neurological warfare before most people even knew what brainwaves were. Receipt? This subproject is confirmed in the declassified MKUltra overview list and cited in FOIA documentation by both the National Security Archive and Dr. Colin A. Ross's research into electromagnetic targeting. Next up, Subproject 98, Memory Implantation via Hypnosis and Drugs. This is where things get Blade Runner. Subproject 98 asked a simple, terrifying question. Can you give someone a memory that isn't real? The researchers combined hypnosis, sodium amytal, and mescaline in experiments designed to implant false experiences, beliefs, and emotions deep enough that the subject couldn't tell them apart from their actual past. The CIA's own language described it as creating a usable double-blind asset, a person who believes the cover story more than the truth. If that doesn't make your skin crawl, nothing will. Receipt? It was mentioned in CIA Technical Services documentation and cited in the U.S. Senate Select Committee on Intelligence Report of 1977, where memory implantation was addressed directly. Next, we have Subproject 54, The Perfect Concussion. Officially, it was titled Perfect Induction of Concussion by Remote Means. This one didn't involve drugs or hypnosis. It involved sound. The goal? Develop a technique for causing complete unconsciousness or memory loss via ultrasonic wave blasts with no visible signs of trauma. Let that sink in. No bruises, no needles, no drugs, just off switch. This may be the most Black Ops adjacent project in the entire MKUltra archive. Receipt? Although some Subproject 54 documents were lost in the infamous 1973 document destruction ordered by Richard Helms, mentions of its funding exist in supplemental project logs cross-referenced by the church committee and whistleblower testimonies, particularly from Dr. Ewan Cameron's associates, point to its real-world testing. They didn't just theorize these subprojects, they tested them on real people, many without consent, many never heard from again. So let's drop the fantasy that MKUltra was all paperwork and Petri dishes. Because behind every subproject, every coded line in the CIA ledger was a real human being, a body, a mind, and sometimes something that didn't survive. Let's talk about the voices that tried to break through. First up, Frank Olson. He was the company man who knew too much. He was a biochemist with the US Army's Special Operations Division. Olson was neck deep in MKUltra's chemical interrogation programs. He knew about the LSD tests, the fatal drug overdoses, the brutal interrogations overseas. In 1953, Olson was secretly dosed with LSD by his CIA colleagues during a retreat. A week later, he fell from the 13th floor of a New York hotel. The official story? Suicide. But his family never bought it. And neither should you. Before he went out the window. Even the Rockefeller Commission admitted Olson didn't fall. He was silenced. Receipts? The Rockefeller Commission report of 1975. Olson family forensic investigation in the CIA vault. Number two, Val Orlico. The housewife electroshocked into amnesia. In Winnipeg, 1956, Val Orlico checked into the Allen Memorial Institute in Montreal for mild depression. Her doctor? Dr. Ewan Cameron, MKUltra Subproject 68. She thought she was being treated. Instead, she was subjected to high-voltage electroshock therapy, drug-induced sleep therapy for 30 days straight. Recorded messages played in loops to her unconscious mind 24 hours a day. Val forgot her own husband's name, her daughter, her past. Cameron's psychic driving method was meant to erase the mind and build a new one. Receipts? The U.S. versus Orlico of 1988 declassified MKUltra Subproject 68 docs from the CIA reading room. Number three, Candy Jones, the beauty queen with an altar inside. We touched on her in our Built to Host episode, but let's go deeper. Candy was a pinup icon turned radio host in the 1940s and 50s. Behind the charm, though, was a second identity, Arlene, a programmed courier for covert ops. She described trigger phrases that could switch her personality, whole trips overseas she couldn't remember, medical records that mysteriously vanished. Her husband, a broadcaster named Long John Neville, recorded her alter voice during late-night interviews, desperate, robotic, terrified. Receipts? The Control of Candy Jones by Donald Bain. First-hand audio recordings. FBI documents mentioned in FOIA requests. Then number four, Paul Bonacci, the testimony that they buried. Paul Bonacci's name came up during the Franklin cover-up hearings in the 1980s. He claimed he was a victim of trauma-based mind control from a young age, trained to dissociate and deliver messages for covert handlers. People rolled their eyes until he knew names, places, and timelines that matched sealed documents. He wasn't alone. Dozens of alleged survivors across the U.S. reported eerily similar stories. Ritualized abuse, programming protocols, multiple personalities with distinct memories. Were they all delusional or trained? Receipts? Franklin Committee testimony, Noreen Goshia's statements, archived witness affidavits. And number five, the ones you'll never know about. Hospitals, prisons, orphanages, foster care networks. MKUltra tested on the vulnerable, the voiceless, the unprotected. Many of those names never recorded. No lawsuits, no graves, just sub-project numbers in dusty CIA archives. They don't have stories because they don't have bodies left to tell them. These weren't accidental casualties. They were field tests. If the program didn't work, the subject disappeared. If it did, they just added a check mark, filed the report, and moved to the next name. Let's get something straight. MKUltra wasn't just a shadowy handful of CIA guys in a concrete basement. It was bigger, way bigger. We're talking a fully operational machine fueled by real budgets, fake nonprofits, and some of the most respected institutions in the world. Yeah, the places you probably still send donations to. So let's call it what it was. A psycho-spiritual demolition crew wearing Ivy League name tags. Start with the schools, the elite ones, the ones we're told are the cradle of knowledge. Harvard had its hands deep in this. A professor named Henry Murray ran brutal psychological stress tests on students under a classified program. One of his subjects? A teenage math genius named Ted Kaczynski. You might know him better as the Unabomber. The test? Designed to destroy ego under pressure. That wasn't some elective. That was textbook MKUltra conditioning. Meanwhile, over in Canada, McGill University was home base for one of MKUltra's most infamous doctors, Ewan Cameron. He was running psychic driving experiments, basically rewiring people's minds with drugs, sleep deprivation, and repetitive audio loops. People went in with anxiety and came out completely broken. This was all funded, by the way, through the CIA front called the Society for the Investigation of Human Ecology. The hell is that? Sounds harmless, right? Well, wrong. Stanford University got its hands dirty with parapsychology and sensory deprivation research. Early remote viewing stuff. Brainwave entrainment. It laid the foundation for what would later become full-blown Stargate Project weirdness. And we're still only halfway down the list. Over at Tulane, a guy named Dr. Robert Heath was sticking electrodes into people's brains and triggering emotional states with pulses. He combined this with drug treatments on psychiatric patients. And yeah, consent was questionable at best. This was all part of Subproject 95. Go look it up. It's in the declassified files. And these weren't the only campuses playing host to MKUltra operations. Columbia, Yale, Johns Hopkins all had some flavor of involvement because the CIA knew that if you needed human test subjects, college campuses, psych wards, and prisons were gold mines. Now, obviously, the agency couldn't just send checks labeled Mind Control Division to university mailrooms. So, they built fake nonprofits. One of the most well-known was the Society for the Investigation of Human Ecology. On paper, it looked like a research grant foundation. In reality, it was the CIA's piggy bank for experimental trauma. Another one was called the Guy Schichter Fund for Medical Research, a total front. This group funneled money to hospitals and private contractors under the guise of medical grants. Many of these projects involved dosing people with psychoactive drugs without their knowledge. And then there were the places where the real damage got done. The hospitals, prisons, VA clinics. The people tested there weren't students. They were patients, inmates, soldiers. People who couldn't say no. People who were told it was for their own good. One guy checked into a psych ward for mild depression. He was kept in drug-induced sleep for over 2 months. Woke up with no memory of who he was. That's not healing. That's erasure. Others were given LSD day after day to see how long it would take to break their minds. We know this because it's all in the receipts. Subproject 9, Subproject 43, Subproject 116. These aren't theories. They're declassified government records. And through it all, the same playbook was used. If anyone found out, call it academic research. If a subject came forward, call them crazy. And when it all finally hit the fan in the 70s, what happened? They shredded the documents, closed ranks, and said, that was a different time. But you don't build a machine like this just to walk away from it. They didn't just run experiments, they erased lives. Let's talk about the ones who didn't make it out. Frank Olson wasn't some fringe nut job. He was a U.S. Army biochemist working inside the Germ Warfare Division at Fort Detrick. In 1953, they dosed him with LSD without his consent. 9 days later, he fell out of a 13-story Manhattan hotel window. Official cause of death? Suicide. Except the autopsy done decades later showed head trauma before the fall. His family said he was trying to leave the program. His son, Eric Olson, still believes his father was murdered. Not for what he knew, but for trying to leave with it. You think that's an isolated tragedy? Let's jump to 1995. A licensed therapist named Valerie Wolf steps up in a presidential hearing on radiation exposure. Except, she's not there to talk about radiation. She's there with two clients, women who claim they were used in government-funded mind control experiments as children. Multiple personalities, torture, trauma bonding. And here's the part most people miss. She brought documentation, real medical records, real timelines, and then silence. You've never heard of Valerie Wolf because that testimony never made it to headlines. No follow-up, no investigation, just the void. Another name, Dr. Colin Ross. Not a conspiracy theorist, a psychiatrist with over 500 peer-reviewed publications. He submitted Freedom of Information Act requests for MKUltra files and received verifiable subproject data. When he tried to present his findings to the broader psychiatric community, crickets. Some journals outright rejected it, not because it wasn't accurate, because it was too accurate. This is the real cost of chasing truth in a world that needs it buried. You don't get medals. You don't get press. You get called crazy until you disappear. And if you're wondering why so few people come forward about programs like MKUltra, that's why. Because the price isn't your reputation. It's your life. So, what did they actually figure out? What did all the drugs, the trauma, the ruined lives actually teach them? It turns out, everything they wanted to know. First, how to break a personality. They learned that repeated trauma, especially in childhood, can fragment a person's mind. You don't need sci-fi tech. You need isolation, unpredictability, and fear. If you apply that in just the right sequence, you can shatter someone's sense of self like glass. Second, how to insert a suggestion. Not hypnosis, not movie magic. A real process, layered suggestion under stress, paired with drugs and reinforcement that can embed a command so deep The person doesn't know it was planted. They called it psychic driving. You've seen it in movies, but this was real. Patients forced to listen to the same phrase for hours, days, sometimes weeks, over and over until it became truth. Third, how to block memory access. This wasn't just about forgetting, it was about partitioning. They discovered that if you cause enough trauma, the brain will seal it away behind neurological firewalls. Walls so strong, even the person who lived it can't find a way back. No password, no recovery, just blank space. And finally, how to create a switchable identity. This is the part that chills you. They learned how to take a fragmented mind and train it. One part normal, the other part programmed. A courier who doesn't remember the message. A triggerable operative who thinks they're just out buying groceries until someone says the right phrase and suddenly it's not them anymore. Here's the part no one talks about. That tech, it didn't stay locked in a file cabinet. It moved into other arenas, behavioral marketing, digital engagement, even interface design. Behavioral nudges? Those are MKUltra principles dressed up in UX jargon. Push notifications that bypass your conscious mind? That's psychic driving with better branding. The way your feed keeps you scrolling? Same basic theory. Fracture attention, then inject suggestion. MKUltra didn't die. It rebranded. It moved from basements to boardrooms. And the scariest part? Now you volunteered for it. You signed the terms of service. You clicked accept. And they're still watching what happens next. If you thought MKUltra was just a Cold War relic, some buried scandal that got shut down and apologized for, then buckle up. Because that's not what happened at all. When MKUltra was exposed in the mid-70s, the headlines made it look like a final chapter. Congressional hearings, church committee, public outrage, but behind the scenes, it wasn't a shutdown, it was a handoff. MKUltra didn't die, it rebranded. Its successor was called MK Search, a quieter, more compartmentalized continuation. Funded by the same agencies, run by many of the same minds, still chasing the same goal, control the mind, erase the trace. And before MKUltra, there was Project Artichoke, the precursor that experimented with forced confessions, memory wiping, hypnosis-based personality splits, and even early ideas of truth serums that bypass willpower. Artichoke was brutal, unregulated, and it worked, just enough to graduate to something bigger. And then, things got weird, because just as Artichoke mutated into MKUltra, a parallel project emerged from the shadows, Project Stargate. This wasn't LSD and trauma anymore. This was remote viewing, psychic targeting, government-funded attempts to weaponize ESP and non-local consciousness. It sounds like sci-fi, but it's backed by FOIA documents and decades of black budget funding. That's the real lineage, Artichoke, MKUltra, MK Search, Stargate. And when the paper trails got too risky, they pushed it out of government and into private sector. This is where things get modern. Enter DARPA, the research arm of the Pentagon, the new playground for cognitive warfare, emotion mapping, and brain-computer interfaces. MKUltra used electrodes and LSD. DARPA uses EEG-driven drone control, memory manipulation, and neuroethical battlefield protocols. Then there's NQTEL, the CIA's own venture capital firm. It sounds like Silicon Valley, but it funds emotion detection algorithms, surveillance platforms, and behavioral prediction engines. You still think this is ancient history? Okay, let's talk Palantir, an analytics company co-founded with government backing. Its software predicts crime patterns, monitors social networks, and profiles individuals in real time. Not for your safety, for control. Let's talk predictive policing. systems that decide your guilt before you act. Let's talk emotion reading ads, AI-generated nudges, and biofeedback loops baked into your phone. Because here's the truth, MKUltra didn't fail, it graduated. It stopped needing labs and front organizations. It moved into apps, platforms, smart devices. It put the subject in charge of their own conditioning. And now, the same goals are still in play. Influence without detection. Control without consent. Obedience without awareness. Only now, the experiments are global, and you're the test subject. So no, it didn't end. It just slipped past the headlines, got a sleeker logo, and crawled into your pocket. MKUltra never died. It just got good at hiding. You ever see those old government documents with half the text blacked out, like they were trying to censor a cookbook for warlocks? Yeah, those are real. And so is MKUltra. Let's just start there. No theories, no mystery, no maybe. The CIA's mind control program existed. It was funded, documented, and admitted to in hearings. We're not in conspiracy land. We're reading from their own receipts. 149 sub-projects, thousands of unwitting victims, doses of LSD handed out like Tic Tacs at universities, hospitals, prisons, even to U.S. soldiers. That part? Proven. Look, MKUltra is real. That's not up for debate. The documents are there. The sub-projects are listed. The testimony exists. You don't need a tinfoil hat. You just need a printer. But let's talk about where the line is. First, what's not confirmed? No, there is no document in the MKUltra archive that mentions Project Monarch. That's an internet term, one that's been warped by rabbit holes that go off the rails. Also, not found in any verified record? Hollywood trauma slaves, ritual abuse programming, and that viral diagram with Britney Spears and butterfly emojis. Those may have sprouted from real abuse patterns, but they aren't in the declassified files. And we're not here to mix verified government crimes with fan fiction. Now, what is confirmed? Sub-Project 130 explored reconstructing a person's identity through isolation and behavior controls. The source? CIA MKUltra financial document released under FOIA. Sub-Project 119 studied bioelectric signals and electromagnetic brain manipulation. The source? The Search for the Manchurian Candidate by John Marks plus FOIA releases. Dr. George Estabrooks wrote openly in the Saturday Evening Post about creating hypnotically induced split personalities used by military intelligence. Published, not hidden. The Church Committee hearings of 1975 publicly confirmed MKUltra existed and that the CIA destroyed most of the files in 1973. You don't need fringe forums for this. You just need time and declassified PDFs. And here's the kicker. The experiments didn't stop. They just rebranded. Everything we talked about in the last section, DARPA's brain-computer interfaces, emotion reading software funded by NQTEL, biometric behavioral tracking, it's all public. Go to their websites. The contracts are sitting right there. They're just not calling it mind control anymore. Now it's called behavioral nudging, cognitive warfighting, and human systems integration. And the test subjects? That would be us. So, why does Divergent Files even matter? We're not here to say everything is connected, like a Netflix true crime doc that's 3 episodes too long. We're here to show you the receipts that should have been burned but weren't. We're here to trace the patterns they hoped no one would notice. This isn't a conspiracy channel. It's a pattern recognition channel. And if those patterns start in 1953, run through college campuses, hospitals, and black budget labs, and then show up again in your smartphone, your search feed, and your emotional responses to the next wave of behavioral science, well, then that's not a theory. That's a continuity plan. They weren't trying to control your mind. They were trying to get inside it. Not just to see what you think, to see how you think. What scares you? What breaks you? What makes you fold without a fight? MKUltra wasn't about drugs. It wasn't about brainwashing. It was about mapping the machinery of human consciousness so they could rewrite the operating system from the inside. And they didn't stop when the headlines did. They stopped hiding it. Today, they don't need LSD. They've got dopamine loops. They don't need hypnosis. They've got algorithmic suggestion. They don't need test subjects. They've got us. Scrolling, tapping, feeding them your biometric rhythms, your search history, your micro reactions, so they can learn exactly how to bypass your conscious defenses. This isn't a science fiction future. It's a behavioral simulation, and you're already logged in. MKUltra didn't fail. It scaled. The scariest part of this story isn't that people were tortured. It's that they learned what worked. And now they don't need cages, just access. So ask yourself this. If they figured out how to erase a personality, how many of us are already blank slates waiting for an update? And how would you even know if you weren't the one behind the wheel anymore? That was MKUltra. Not the myth, not the movie version, the receipts, the documents, the stuff that slipped through the cracks and never should have seen daylight. If your brain's still intact after this one, do me a favor and hit that subscribe button. No sponsors, no networks, just me chasing files the algorithm would rather bury. And I promise you, this video will probably not see the light of day. I don't think this is going to be pushed very much. Also, if you want to help us keep going even deeper, you can join the squad over at patreon.com/divergentfiles for as little as $3 a month. That's where we post extended cuts, behind-the-scenes madness, and topics we can't even touch on YouTube. And, plot twist, we're not just a YouTube channel. We've gone full rogue. The Divergent Files Project podcast is live everywhere podcasts live. Same rabbit holes, more freedom, less censorship. Do you have a theory? Drop it in the comments. I read them all, especially the ones that sound like redacted CIA transcripts. Because this story, it doesn't end here. MKUltra was the prototype. The sequel, we're living in it. So until next time, stay curious, stay sharp, and remember, you are truly appreciated.